day before Christmas, right? Do many people have to work on the day before Christmas, or that's, yes, many people, many people. You're just, you're going to go to work later, or you're playing hooky? You, I'm looking behind you. Huh? Okay. Okay. Well, same theme, following in the footsteps. Can the light go down, Shabal, or somebody? Our focus is these three things. We want to connect with Krishna. And prayer is a very standard way of connecting with Krishna. And there are prayers by our acharyas and others found within Srimad Bhagavatam that are intended to connect with Krishna, and they help us connect with Krishna, so we'll just follow in the footsteps of those great personalities with our intention of connecting with Krishna by that method. Yesterday morning, there was a session on acceptance. We made one of reference from the prayers of Lord Brahma to Krishna. It was Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text Number 8. We're going to see the verse again, but we're going to go further beyond those verses. In the first 8 verses, this is the beginning of Brahma's prayers, so like that beautiful image, he's with palms folded before Krishna, who's little boy, and he, the story, the pastime, is Brahma wanted, after seeing the Agasura demon Leela, where Krishna killed the Agasura demon, he was, wow, what's the limit of the opulences and potencies and mystic powers of Krishna? I want to see. So he did something that he shouldn't have done. He interfered with Krishna's pastimes and kidnapped first the calves and then the cowherd boys to see what Krishna would do. And what Krishna showed him was the unlimitedness of his mystic opulences and potencies, and we'll see an image like this as we go along this morning. And then everything just disappeared. He saw the calves and the cowherd boys both in the cave and in front of Krishna, and he realized Krishna manifested the calves and the cowherd boys that are in the cave, and he manifested identical likenesses of the calves and the cowherd boys still sitting there having lunch at the same time. Not only he can manifest identical forms of himself, but he can manifest whatever he likes, including identical forms of each of the cowherd boys and each of the calves. And then he showed, simultaneous with all the cowherd boys, four-armed forms of Narayan behind each of the cowherd boys and calves, surrounded by all of the potencies of the Supreme Lord, a big cacophony of sound as they were all offering prayers, personified Vedas, and this is and that, and the potencies of the Lord praising him. And then, poof, it all disappeared. And it was just smiling, Krishna looking at Brahma. So he wanted to see. There you go. And then he offered his prayers. And One way of describing his prayers was he's assessing how to know the unknowable, which it's a contradiction, right? How to know the unknowable. Well, he rules out other methods. He rules out the speculative method first. And by speculative method, one cannot know the unknowable. And then what to speak of, that unknowable that has unlimited potencies. How do you measure that which is unlimited? Or how do you know that which is unlimited? We're limited, so we can't. And then the conclusion he reaches is, it's by the bhakti process that one can. And so he's on board with the bhakti process. That's these first eight verses. And the final of those eight verses is the one that we discussed yesterday. A very essential part of the bhakti process is how to deal with adverse things that happen in this world, at the place of duality. There's misfortune. There's good fortune, and there's misfortune. And how do you handle it? You're a nice devotee, and you're going along with your devotional service, and here comes some misfortune. Someone punches you in the face. Or whatever. They say something harsh, or they... Something. Now, how do you handle it? Or how do you respond? And one of the lessons that we discussed yesterday morning was the principle of acceptance, and then you decide what you're going to do once you have accepted the circumstance that hurts, and it's misfortune. So the verse that we read, just let's say the verse again. It's the Sanskrit, and then I'll read the English. It's a nice verse to memorize because we always experience something that's unpleasant.
Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam ridvagvapurbir vididhan namaste jiveta yomukti pade sadaya bhak.
Just a little, we didn't mention this yesterday, but this is a verse that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said. Vyasadeva made a mistake. He said to Lord Chaitanya. And then Lord Chaitanya wanted him to explain, how is it possible Vyas can make a mistake? Well, he used Muktipade to refer to Krishna. But when people hear the word mukti, commonly people think of Sayuja Mukti, or becoming one with the Supreme. And although there's other forms of Vaishnava mukti, liberation, people commonly think of Sayuja Mukti, becoming one with the Supreme. So he shouldn't have used that word, Mukti Pade. Should have been Bhakti Pade. He's the giver of bhakti. And then he went on, elaborated, and said, there are two kinds of Sayuja Mukti. There's one where one merges into the effulgence of the Lord, and there's another where one merges into the body of the Lord. And of the two, the second is worse. They see the form, and they want to become one with the form of the Lord. That's worse. So it should have been Bhakti Pade. Like, he didn't ask, what do you think of that? He's just like declaring. So Lord Chaitanya was very soft. He could have been whatever, but he was very soft and said, Sarvabhauma, you're a great scholar. It is only Krishna, very important, it is only Krishna that can give mukti. Other great personalities, of all the devas, they can't give mukti. But Krishna can give mukti. So Mukti Pade is correct. It refers to Krishna. But just see, You, Sarvabhaumacharya, you are absorbed in this impersonal liberation idea, and now you can't even stand to hear the word mukti. You've been changed, you're a changed man. And it's hard to change old people, right? So he said, it's because of your mercy. Actually, he said, it's because of the mercy of my brother-in-law, Gopinathacharya. Because Gopinathacharya blessed me that I will get the mercy of you, and therefore, because of Gopinathacharya's blessing to get the mercy of you, I become a devotee and I can't stand the word mukti anymore. Just a little edification, or, you know, what's out there in the spiritual marketplace these days. It's abundant misconception. And one of them, I met somebody not so long ago, a man from Turkey who now is living in Vancouver with the details. He has been on a quest to connect with the personality of Godhead. Or he didn't say the personality of Godhead. The highest truth. And he said his journey began when he was not well, and so he wanted some very soothing music. And so he got some of this modern soothing music, you know, the electronic soothing music thing. And he was on his back listening to, and it turns out he didn't know what it was, it just soothing music, but it was Gayatri Mantra. Someone soothing music and persons in a, you know, a dreamy voice saying over and over again. So it went in, Gayatri Mantra. He didn't know what it was, but then later he found out what it was. Then they gave this long story. It took about half an hour. But, you know, he got to the point where he learned about Devi. So he became a Devi worshipper, and there was a particular feature of Devi that he kind of learned about. And then he found a guru online that was a worshipper of Devi, but he didn't speak English. He only spoke Hindi. And so he was having a trend. He was on and on and on and on. So he wanted to know, you know, he never heard Bhagavad Gita, never heard Krishna, that Krishna is the source of everything, never heard it before. He came to visit a temple. Long story. And, where's this from? Can you explain? Because everything I found online, it doesn't say anything about this. That there's a supreme person, his name is Krishna, he's the source of everything. It's got all kinds of other stuff. And then we got on the topic of liberation. And so he said, well, you know, what I've read online is those who are worshippers of Devi and those who are worshippers of Lord Shiva, they also promise liberation. And I said, basically, sorry, Charlie. Whatever that idea they have of liberation, whatever that idea is not beyond the creation. Devi and Lord Shiva can give that which is within the realm of creation. They're endowed to do that by the source of everything. They're not the source of everything. They're endowed by the source of everything to give benedictions and call it whatever you want to call it, but it's within the purview of creation, that which is created and destroyed. It's not liberation. So what is liberation? Here's what liberation is. In the source of Bhakti Pade, that's Krishna. Because he's the source of everything, including mukti. He's the source of everything, including bhakti. So it's a nice understanding. It's a very important understanding for us and our interactions with others. We may not have on the tip of our tongue this verse, but we should at least in principle know. And when you're passing, even if it's on the tip of your tongue, and those who are recipients or searching personalities, this young man was unique. He really wanted to know. He didn't want to, like, just take somebody's word for it. He wanted to know. Because his thing was, you know, what do I have to do to see Krishna? You have to become qualified. That's what you have to do. And here's the here's the procedure for qualification. Here's where it shows in Bhagavad Gita what that qualification is. Method and what it looks like when you're there. And then it's dependent upon Krishna's mercy. He doesn't have to show himself to you. But if he wants to, he can. But first become qualified. So, Brahma's qualified, and he's totally absorbed now, not like he wasn't before, but what he just experienced, his curiosity was more than satisfied. He was overwhelmed. And very much appreciating the kindness of Krishna, even he had made this offense that Krishna reciprocated with his curiosity. There is no limit to Krishna's opulence and his mystic powers. So now that he's taken full shelter of the bhakti process, leaving aside any speculative attempt to know the unlimited, he begins another set of prayers. There's some, you know, it's not just, gee, I'm sorry, I kidnapped the cowherd boys and the calves. He expresses his deep regret for having not understood Krishna correctly and done what, you know, having done what he did. Now, how can we understand Brahma doing something like that? That's, you know, a like natural question. Wait a minute, he's the head of our sampradaya. So what about me? Well, this is one of those that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text 30. Even if one does something really bad, but they're consistently bhajatemam ananya bhak, ananya bhakti, they're engaged in undivided devotional service, sadur eva. So that's how we should see Brahma. Sadur eva. It's a tsunami came in and he became overwhelmed. Now he's not overwhelmed anymore. He's back in the saddle of being really clear about bhakti. And then he enters into this discussion that is also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he's going to say, you, little boy, are my father. And Krishna is going to say, what? I'm a little boy. And you're the firstborn being in the universe. So please consider what you're saying. And then he gives his reasoning why he says what he says. And that's in these verses and it's unpacked in Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're going to spend a little time with that. So moving over to after his apology, text 11. Oh my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the process of bona fide hearing. And thus, their hearts become cleansed and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. And then, carrying on, my dear Lord, it is said that when the three planetary systems are merged into the water at the time of dissolution, your plenary portion, Narayana, which we'll see in the next verse, it's another way of addressing Garbhadakshay Vishnu. We'll see. So hang on. Lies down on the water, gradually a lotus flower grows from his navel, and Brahma, it's Brahma speaking about Brahma. And Brahma takes birth upon that lotus flower. Certain these words are not false. Thus, am I not born from you? O Lord of Lords, you are the seer of all creation. You are indeed everyone's dearest life. Are you not, therefore, my father, Narayana? Then he says, Narayana refers to one whose abode is in the water, born from Nara, or Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And that Narayana, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, is your plenary portion. All your plenary portions are transcendental. They are absolute and not creations of Maya. So there's a refutation of Mayavad doctrine in Brahma's prayers. So here's an image of Krishna Das Kaviraj writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he touches on this verse, and Krishna responds, saying, what I said, Krishna said, Brahma, can please consider, I'm a little boy, and you're the firstborn living being, how is it that I'm your father? And Krishna Das Kaviraj unpacks the verse in the following way. Yes, you are. You are my father. Let me prove it. So he goes to the empiric method. Krishna is the ayana, or the refuge of all naras, the aggregate of all living beings. And you, Krishna, are the refuge of all living beings, and therefore you're the original Narayana, who is the father of every living being. Now I'll give you the second reason. Krishna is the source of the Purusha avatars. He protects and invests potencies in the Purushas, who in turn are the shelters of all living beings. So he's the shelter of those who are the shelters. So you're the original Narayan. You're my father. Now I'll give you the third explanation. Krishna oversees the wanderings, or ayana, of all living beings. Of course, that's in his Shiradakshai Vishnu feature. But Krishna, we can say, Krishna oversees the wanderings of all living entities. So, you are my father. Interesting. That's in Brahma's prayers. So now, text 15. My dear Lord, if your transcendental body, which shelters the entire universe, is actually lying upon the water, then why were you not seen by me when I searched for you? And why, though I could not envision you properly within my heart, did you then suddenly reveal yourself? So this is referring to when Brahma appeared on the lotus, coming from the body of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. It was darkness in all directions, and he was inquisitive. I want to know, who am I? Where have I come from? What is the source of my existence? You know, since the beginning of time, people have asked such a question. And he then searched. He used his reasoning faculty, which is, I'm on a lotus. The lotus come from some source. It just climbed down the stem and I'll find where it came from. Very logical. And he climbed down and down and down and down and down and down and down. Because he heard, it says, he heard the splashing of the waves of the Garbhadak Ocean. So he heard that there's something below, but he couldn't find what was below. So he realized, by my reasoning and sense perception powers, I'm not going to find out. He came to that conclusion. And then he heard tapa. So he's asking, well, why I couldn't see you? You're the source of my existence. Why I couldn't see you? And although I couldn't see you within my heart either, suddenly you appeared. So could you please explain? And now we're going to need the portable microphone. And this is a summary dramatic reading with some nice soft music in the background of the next set of prayers, where Brahma is giving the answer to his own question.
Lord Brahma attempts to express the ramifications of the opulence that he has seen Krishna display. He prays to Krishna, O Lord, I previously was unable to either understand or see you due to the coverings of your own maya, your illusory energy. But you are the controller of that maya, and that was proved by Mother Yashoda's seeing the universe within your abdomen. Now, at the present, that universe is externally manifest as your inconceivable energy, and it is therefore all that I perceive. Today, by your manifesting, all the cows, cowherd boys, and Vishnu forms who are being worshipped by all living entities, you've demonstrated that the entire creation is your inconceivable potency. And now, I'm seeing before me the original form of the unlimited Supreme Absolute Truth. To the ignorant, you seem to be of this material world, although it is you who appears as Brahma, the creator, who appears as Vishnu, the maintainer, and as Shiva, the destroyer. To demonstrate that you, the Absolute Truth, is an unlimited transcendental person, you descend within the universe as avatars, and you take birth among the demigods, sages, humans, animals, and the aquatics. As an avatar, you then, by your spatial potency, perform your innumerable, inconceivable, mysterious pastimes. Due to you, this entire universe, which, like a dream, is by nature unreal, nevertheless appears real, and thus it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. This universe appears real because it is manifested by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. You are the one supreme soul, the primeval supreme personality, the absolute truth, self-manifesting, endless and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible, perfect and complete without any rival, and free from all material designations. Your happiness cannot be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination? Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. By the grace of his spiritual master, a jnani can mix bhakti with his jnana. He will then be able to see you as the soul of all souls. He will be able to see you as the super soul of his own self. This vision will allow him to cross the ocean of material existence. For one who has thus realized you, the illusory energy at once subsides, for he is free of the false vision of perceiving anything as separate from you. Seeing you with this vision of knowledge and remaining in knowledge of you, devoid of the false perceptions that are the cause of the existence of the material world, his ignorance and illusion cease. Therefore, through knowledge, of knowledge of you and knowledge of himself as your eternal servant, neither liberation nor bondage have meaning for him, just as day and night have no meaning for one present on the sun planet. How foolish are the jnanis! How foolish are the mayavadis! They're fools because they consider your form as a manifestation of illusion. How foolish are the conditioned souls, regardless of how intelligent they think themselves as being, they all perceive themselves as their bodies, and they thus fail to see their self as part of you. They're all fools because they reject you, and in so doing, they search for the Supreme Soul outside of your Supreme Personality. How foolish are all of these so-called learned men. O unlimited Lord, the saintly devotees who have added bhakti to their jnana seek you out within their own bodies by rejecting everything separate from you. Indeed, how can discriminating persons appreciate the real nature of a rope lying before them until they refute the illusion that it is a snake? My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years.
Pretty powerful, huh? This is Brahma's prayers to understand the unknowable through the bhakti process. And the bhakti process results in Krishna being pleased by one wishing to be in his service and attracted to him. And then Krishna reveals, as he did with Brahma, of course, in such a manner that not likely is going to happen with us, but at least to understand the nature of Krishna in some way. So he's declaring, you are the original, unlimitedly powerful, source of everything, including even the source of Narayana. So Krishna's contemplation, really? Then how is it possible for someone to know that? Another often quoted verse, Atapi Deva, Padambujam Dvaya. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So this is a similar verse, what was spoken 1 through 8, and it's similar verse to ones we just covered. So speculation ruled out. It's like, you know, Rupa Goswami's celebrated verse of defining bhakti. Anyabhilash dushanyam jnana karmadhanavratam. So now the prayers move on. Now that you have understood me, Brahma, what is it that you want? That's a natural question for Krishna. Of course, Krishna knows. So he's going to disclose. My dear Lord, I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life as Lord Brahma or in another life, whatever, wherever I take my birth, I may be counted as one of your devotees. I pray that wherever I may be, even among the animal species, I can engage in devotional service to your lotus feet. So that's the prayer of Brahma, the concluding aspiration, hankering. He'll also say, I want the association of your great devotees, but because that will help fix one. That's what we're going to be discussing tomorrow morning. It'll help fix one in this, properly in this mood of devotion. And then the concluding section, these, what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says is, Brahma falls into an ocean of vrajaprema. He's going to describe the super exalted position of love for Krishna as it is found in Vrindavan. And it's natural that he would do that because he's in Vrindavan and he's seen what is the pastime of Krishna and the loving exchange between Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan, and it's super exalted. Oh, Almighty Lord, how greatly fortunate are the cows and the ladies of Vrindavan, the nectar of whose breast milk you have happily drunk to your full satisfaction, taking the form of their calves and children. So what happened during the absence of Brahma, it's a nice leela. In Brahma's time, it was very short, a few moments. On earth time, it was a whole year. So during that whole year that passed on earth, while Brahma was going to look for the calves and cowherd boys and came back and saw what he saw, Krishna had manifested himself as calves and cowherd boys in exact likeness of the calves and cowherd boys, because the cows had the desire to experience parental affection towards Krishna, so Krishna became their calf, and as a calf, Krishna accepted their milk. And the mothers, who had affection for their children, naturally, had greater affection for Krishna than their own children, which is not natural. So Krishna became their child. Now this was unknown to them, but they were bewildered, because when their son came home, after being with Krishna and the calves during the day, calves means they're little boys, they're still little boys, they had affection for their son like they had for Krishna. They were like, wow, it's really nice. And there's more to this. So all of this happened. And Krishna, so Brahma is understanding, Krishna fulfilled the desires of the mothers of the boys and the cows whose calves were their calves, accepting that motherly affection from them. How greatly fortunate. All the Vedic sacrifices performed from time immemorial up to the present day have not given you as much satisfaction. So what's most pleasing to Krishna is the loving association of the residents of Vrindavan in comparison to the, since time immemorial, the Vedic sacrifices, which Krishna is pleased by, but not as much as the residents of Vrindavan. How greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. Yet, even though the extent of the good fortune of these residents of Vrindavan is inconceivable, we, 11 presiding deities of the various senses headed by Lord Shiva, are also most fortunate because the senses of these devotees of Vrindavan are the cups through which we repeatedly drink the nectarian, intoxicating beverage of the honey of your lotus feet. So he's honoring the residents of Vrindavan in this very interesting way. My greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokul, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members. Putana had two brothers, and her two brothers were also delivered by Krishna. In exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? That's a nice question. And Vishwanath summarizes it this way. They have given you everything, their homes, wealth, etc. Their very lives and hearts. How are you going to reciprocate with them now? You are such a generous giver. You have given yourself to Putana. How then will you reciprocate with these Vrajabhasis? And you know what his answer is? You cannot. And so he says instead, Krishna raised their level of love to the mood of pranaya, a relationship of profound affection. That's their reciprocation. So this is the end. We're hearing the prayers of Brahma to inspire our feelings of connection with Krishna, especially in his feature in Braja. No, we're in Chicago. Maybe we're from some other place, but we're in Chicago right now. And it's not Braja. But the love of the residents of Braja is so exalted just by hearing about it, as we're hearing about it from Lord Brahma, it inspires that eagerness for connecting with Krishna in that way. It's so wonderful. Now, how do we... I'll end with this. One of the lectures that I've been hearing in this little device is about that big, and it's all the Prabhupada's recorded lectures, and he's going through in the first section. I mentioned this the other day. Bhagavad Gita from first chapter. So one of the classes is, whether it's a 26-second avenue, the sound in the background sounds like it's 26-second avenue because you can hear the cars and the sirens and the beeping horns and all that. Sounds like 26-second avenue. But the people in the audience are, she refers to specifically Dr. Mishra and other people. So at one point he says, for example, Mr. Cohen has recently gone to California, and I haven't been there, so I asked Mr. Cohen, when you get there, can you write to me and tell me what it's like, because depending upon your description, I also may want to go there. Then he said, so similarly, we've been hearing about Chintamani. It's like, he's just using that phrase, it's the Govinda prayers. And by hearing about Chintamani and Goloka, we may want to go there. Just by sound. So his point was, so similarly, that which is beyond our senses to experience, we have to first hear. And when we hear, we may have some enthusiasm. I want to go there. But if somebody says, it's a really nice place, heaven is a really nice place, you should want to go there, and ask them, what's it like? What do you do there? What's the travel advertisement? So, what to speak of Goloka Vrindavan and the love of the residents in Braja and that part of Goloka Vrindavan? We're hearing directly from Brahma, who has this first-hand experience. It's not our experience, it's his experience. But we look to Brahma as he is the original preceptor of our whole sampradaya. And by hearing from him, it's inspiring. The potency is there to wish to be connected with Krishna, especially even in that feature. And this is Srimad Bhagavatam. It's inspiring us through Brahma's prayers to connect with Krishna in his most intimate feature, in Vrindavan. And that starts even from Canto 1, what to speak of Canto 10. So that's an attempt to elaborate on our theme here for this, our time together, this winter retreat. Hare Krishna. Can we turn the light on? And someone wants to move the microphone around. Somebody would like to discuss some point or question. There's Subal.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. I understand it's not appropriate to understand these transcendental pastimes from the perspective of a linear chronology, but I wanted to ask you, on what you study on Lord Brahma's pastimes given in the Bhagavatam and the Brahma Samhita. So Lord Brahma, some chronology, if it's possible, that has been revealed of Lord Brahma first appearing and then hearing tapas and performing, and then Krishna appearing, shaking his hand, or Lord Vishnu, and then when the Brahma Samhita gets revealed to him, or the realization of the Brahma Samhita, and then there is this pastime, then somehow when he becomes the four heels of Barshana, and also appearing in the Haridas Thakur. So I know it's a long thing, but you know, maybe some among your studies, you know, how this works out.
You did a pretty good job. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Go ahead.
Maharaj, in the last section when you mentioned Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on how Brahma was saying that how can you reciprocate with the Brajvasis, and then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says he can't, and therefore Krishna promoted their love to this pranaya. So I was just wondering, is that feature of love something that's exclusive to the Brajvasis?
Yes. Okay. Others cannot know it. It's a bestowal upon them. Now, there's a qualification for that to be bestowed upon them. And there's an eligibility for us to have that bestowed upon us. But it's the association. There are eternal associates that are like that. So, you know, this is, you know, this chronology question that Subal was just asking. It wasn't that once, once upon a time the resident of Vrindavan didn't have this pranaya. And then, you know, they felt certain things. And then Krishna couldn't reciprocate, and so he just gave them pranaya. So like, it's not like once upon a time there wasn't, and then something happened and then there was. It's a feature of Braja. It can be described as in terms, this is Bhaktivinoda. How do we describe that which is eternal? We use language as if it's within time, but we should bear in mind it's not within time. That's what how he explains. Now, there's us. So we're, according to Rupa Goswami's teaching, is we follow at a certain stage when there's a qualification, we follow the ragatmika devotees and we cultivate a mood like those eternally perfected souls. And then there's a stopover point, that is, after this life, we enter into Krishna's Bhoma Lila, where those eternal associates are training up the new guys, newcomers. And they train them in their service and their mood and so forth, and then wherever Krishna wants them to go, Goloka Vrindavan. So that has a chronology, but the eternal associates, we speak as if there's a chronology, but there's not a chronology. It's just describing a dynamic of Krishna's reciprocating with their love in such a way that it's just this extraordinary affection for him. And that's just part of their being. So where does that extraordinary affection come from? It comes from Krishna. Because he's the source of everything, including their affection for him. Does that do it for you?
Yeah, my only other question related to that is, I don't think I fully understand what pranaya is actually. but it sounds like it's the devotees do not expect Krishna to reciprocate with them the way that they throw themselves at him. And so is that something that is only the Brajavasis have, that other, you know, like, for example, worship, Sri Vaishnavas, maybe do they expect, devotees expect reciprocation? Is that what?
Well, it's a tough question to answer. And my answer would go like this. There could be other ways to answer than what I'm about to say. And that is we would not say that the residents of Vaikuntha have some expectation, a material type of expectation. They have a relationship with Narayana, but there's no material contamination in their relationship or their expectation. At the same time, there's perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So what's the most perfect about the residents of Vrindavan is that their love is so intense. And amongst the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis, their love is most intense. So that's not, let's say, well, you know, Mother Jasoda, she's nice, but she's just not intense. Like the gopis. Well, she is. But, you know, it's so Vatsalya Rasa and Madhurya Rasa. And then amongst them all is Radha. So she's superlative amongst the superlative. According to what Sanatana Goswami says in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, in this part one, when Narada is searching for who is the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, he says, they're all perfect. It's as if they're passing on to the next one, more perfect, more perfect, more perfect, but they're all perfect. And in their humility, they're saying they're not, but they are, because their interest is the interest of the Supreme Lord. That's pure. So then there's degrees of intensity. So now back to your question. Not just the followers of Sri Vaishnavism, but those who are residents of Vaikuntha, or those who are residents of Ayodhya, or those that are residents of Dwarka, Mathura, and not Vrindavan. Do they have an expectation? That was your question. Indicating like a material one or some kind of a one. Well, we're souls. So that which is the contamination expectation over here has its counterpart in the spiritual world, and the expectation is Krishna is going to be kind. But his kindness may not come in the way that we think it's going to come. And we're accepting of that because that was what we discussed yesterday morning. Like Prithu. Whatever you want, because you know best. So what's the expectation? You know best. It's a spiritual expectation. It's not a material one. Whatever you want. And it can be different. It can be, you know, I don't want anything. Or it could be, you know, I want your, this is Brahma, I want your devotional service. That's an expectation. But it's a spiritual one. And to the residents of Braja, do they want Krishna's service? You bet. Because they're not stones. So it's an expectation, but the degree of selflessness is the exceptional feature of Madhurya Bhav. Unlike what's seen by Kunta. Okay? Do you want to deepen?
Guru Maharaj, I have two questions. Just before the Chatush Shloki of the Bhagavatam, I was just reading this verse, and Lord Brahma prays, he says that, I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the Supreme. And then, in his apology to Krishna in text 9 and 10, he says, I thought myself tvat pratak ishamanina, I thought myself separate from you. So, how to understand, and what can we learn from that, how Krishna reciprocated with him when he initially prayed for protection from thinking himself separate from Krishna. And then Krishna put him in a situation where he became bewildered and tried to challenge Krishna himself.
Well, it wasn't challenge. It was curiosity. That's my understanding anyway. It wasn't like, who's bigger, me or you? He just wanted to see the extent, and that was his way of going about finding the extent. What would Krishna do? Does that answer your question? No.
I guess my understanding through the pastime was that he actually lost sight of the fact that Krishna was the personality of Godhead.
Well, you know, Arjuna lost sight too. Now, is he a, how do we understand that? Prabhupada would become very disturbed. I heard twice in conversations with Prabhupada, I can't remember if it was room or morning walk, but he was very disturbed when somebody said, how can Brahma make boo-boos? Because he's the head of our sampradaya. And Prabhupada said, he's good enough. Like, okay.
My question is more from Krishna's side. He, Brahma, please protect me.
It depends on, there's different Brahmas and so forth and so on. But in other words, Krishna could be demonstrating to us we should be wary. Krishna could have detected something and removed that something. It depends. Krishna could just be reminding Brahma just in case, so he doesn't become forgetful. You know, it can be any number of options. And it doesn't have to be, at least my understanding is, this is reading Tamal Krishna Maharaj's unpublished manuscript of Brahma Samhita on Brahma's position. It's not like there's only one source where Brahma comes from. There's like six of them. And then the destination after Brahma's life is similarly all kinds of variegated. So one could take one of these and say that's it. But it's not it. There's multiple. There's multiple Brahmas, there's multiple sources. Sometimes Brahma becomes in his next life Brahma again. Sometimes, all kinds of sometimes, according to the very thorough research that Tamal Krishna Maharaj did. Now he doesn't give all the scriptural references for each of these, but so the picture that I have from reading his manuscript I'm sharing with you, which is there are different Brahmas in different situations within those different Brahmas. What to speak of how many universes are there simultaneously, and there's a Brahma in each one of those. And then the universes are closed up, and then there's resting, and then another creation, and so many Brahmas. So it's quite variegated. The options are many. And what's happening depends on the Brahma and, you know, and Krishna and their relationship. So there's lots of options.
Got it, thank you. The other question Maharaj I had is, as I was reading this section, what stood out to me was the fact that Brahma spent 8 verses with beautiful glorifications of Krishna, and then he expresses what he did wrong and he apologizes. So is there something to learn from that? Because putting our feeble self.
He apologized before, and then he apologized again, and you know that sense of regret didn't depart. Okay, I took care of my regret. Now I'm going to move on. It stayed with him. And that's, you know, going back to the chronology question of Subal. At least according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Brahma felt really, continued to feel very regretful. And so he went to Mayapur and did penance to cleanse his heart, which was already cleansed, but to cleanse his heart from that mistake that he made. So. Then Haridas Thakur. So, is that, you want to pursue further?
No, I think I'm
good. Okay. Our guest here.
Hare Krishna. So, it's probably a stupid question, but I just want to understand.
A silly question. Okay.
But a question on the chronology. So when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear that when Krishna appears, all the demigods, they recite prayers and they welcome him. Assuming Brahma, Indra, everyone is involved in that.
Everyone does what?
Everyone recites prayers, everyone welcomes Krishna to this world when Krishna appears.
Well, he's still in the womb of Devaki and they offer prayers. Even before he appears, they offer prayers.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
During the birth of Krishna.
Okay, Haribol. Offer prayers to Krishna. He appeared.
Right. We also know that the heavenly planets, when we talk about heavenly planets, one day in that heavenly planet is probably like thousands of years in the earthly world.
So what's your question?
So, when Brahma and Indra, when they are into this illusion of Govardhana Hill and
this
scenario that we discussed. So basically, in earthly planet, it basically probably would have been like 10 years, 15 years.
It could be do what? Some of the bank door slammed when you spoke.
I'm just saying in earthly years, it's only like 10 years, 15 years, right, till this pastime happens. Which basically means like it's nothing in the heavenly planets. So just want to understand like when the Krishna comes to this world, the demigods know that it is Krishna because they welcomed him, they recited prayers. Now in the, when the
this is a college question. I'm labeling. A college question.
It's a college question.
And time is quite flexible. The short answer. Take the microphone from him. For Krishna, time is very flexible. He can move time this way, he can move time that way. Time is very flexible. So for his pastimes, he can open and he can close time as he likes. So the demigods can move within Krishna's time or stay within their time or earthly time or whatever Krishna likes. It's quite flexible. There's no really problem. The demigods or whoever connect with Krishna, they're in Krishna's time, which is very flexible. It's Nitya Leela. It's a pastime. Then he has his Boma Leela that are going on continuously and he opens up and then closes it. And they just, you know, they're invited in and they can have a pastime with Krishna and then, you know, they go back and they have their demigod time wherever they came from. It's a reciprocation from Krishna according to his adjustment of time and place. A nice example of this is Narada's visit to Dwarka. You familiar? Narada goes to visit Dwarka. Krishna's in Dwarka, 16,000 palaces. He wants to visit Krishna. So he goes to Dwarka. And when he goes to Dwarka, he finds time is very flexible. Because he goes from one palace to the next palace to the next palace and it's different times of the day in each palace. Not like the same time of the day in this palace, whatever Krishna wants. And Krishna's doing different things in different expansions with different queens and in a very flexible manner. Time and space are quite flexible. When you're involved and when the demigods are involved in Krishna's pastimes, or Narada, or Brahma, or Indra, or anybody, it's very flexible. It's just his pastime, and that's his internal potency that moves according to how he wants it to move. It's not a problem. So this limitation of our measuring sticks doesn't apply. Someone had their hand. Okay, over here. I think this will be it.
Sharon Paraswami, you were describe, or you had said that you know, many persons are looking to Lord Shiva and Durga, Goddess Durga, for as personalities that can allow for liberation. So, and you made the point that actually, and you gave the example of speaking to the young man, that it's only Krishna who can give liberation. So, you had stated that these demigods can give liberation within the purview of the material realm.
No, I didn't say that.
Oh.
Let me say what I said.
Yes.
Maybe I didn't say it clear enough. The notion of the teachers that say that Devi and Shiva give liberation, it's something else that they give. It's not liberation. They're calling it liberation, but it's whatever it is, it's within that which is destructible, which is not what liberation is. But they're calling it liberation. The concept of liberation is a misunderstanding of what liberation is. And they're giving that. Does that clarify?
Yes, it does, because I was trying to understand what that liberation then meant within the material purview. But thank you, Sharon Paraswami. I understand that the concept has been used
incorrectly. It's a notional liberation only.
Yes, I got exposed to somebody who is a worshiper of Goddess Durga and having that statement be made to me. So I was a little taken aback. So I'm very delighted to hear you mention this. Thank you.
Okay. Well, it's right from Brahma's prayers. Mukti Pade. There's one more question here.
Maharaj, you were talking about the love of the gopis of Vrindavan, and you were sharing how can Krishna reciprocate to the love. You said that it's not possible to reciprocate. And then you shared about like how Krishna feels in reciprocation to the love. Can you share that part one more time?
Sure. Now this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's not Ramapad Swami. What do I know? Now, one of the things that Krishna says to the gopis is, I have no way to repay you. You're going to have to be satisfied with your own love. And my understanding of what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says is that. Now, he reciprocates through the medium of his love. So it is a reciprocation. So to say, for Vishwanath to say, he cannot. Because that's Brahma's question, is how are you going to reciprocate? And the answer is he cannot. But then he reciprocates. That's a contradiction, right? He cannot and then he does. But that's Krishna. Does that answer your question? It's like the stump the Swami question Prabhupada was asked. Krishna is God. You have this idea, Krishna is God, and he has inconceivable potencies. So it's a, you know, it's a contradiction question, a semantic question. Can God create something so heavy he cannot lift it? Because if you say he can create and then he cannot lift it, then it's something he cannot do. He can't lift it. Then if you say no, he can't create something so heavy he cannot lift it, then there's something he cannot do. So it's a trick question, semantic question. And the answer Prabhupada gave immediately is, yes, he can create something so heavy he can't lift it, and then lift it. Because he's full of inconceivable potencies. So he can do and then undo. The Queen Kunti's prayers teach us that he is the resting place of all contradictions. Because within him is everything. There's this and not this. Whatever exists or doesn't exist is within him. So he's the source of everything, and so he's the resting place, or the place where all contradictions are resolved within him. So he cannot, and then he does.
Maharaj, you had used a specific word from the document. I think it said pranava or pranaya something. This is specific.
It's his commentary. It's not in the shloka. It's his commentary.
Like, what does that word mean?
What does the word mean?
It's like the life air.
Exceptional affection. You can look it up, but it means different things. But the usage is outstanding exceptional affection. You know, Braja Prem. But they already have Braja Prem, so how can he give them something they don't already have? He it becomes superlative. We're running out of time. This is the last one.
Yes, sir. Maris, this is a question from yesterday morning's class.
From yesterday's morning's class.
Yes. The last slide was a commentary from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where it said that the devotees of the Lord are beyond karma and time. And whatever is awarded to them by Krishna is it is a consequence of their anarthas, not.
If you're going to give some specific reference to something from yesterday, I may have to pull it up and put it on the screen so we can respond properly. You want me to do that? Can I do it this evening?
Yes.
What time? 3:30? 3:30? First thing, 3:30. Before we do anything else, we'll do that one. Is that okay? Because I want to be really clear what your question is and not, you know, just not even hit the target. So we have time for Srinath's question.
Guru Maharaj, this was a very powerful presentation that I, was part of it. My question is, in the presentation you mentioned, after the prayers of Brahma, Krishna says, now you know me. So now that you know me, what is your desire for? And the most inspiring line immediately came was, I want to be your devotee. So generally, we serve Krishna under the guidance of our spiritual master. We want to be the devotee of Krishna. And then there is Lord Brahma, who is at the top of this disciplic succession, saying the same thing. So is this empowerment come directly from there? So though we don't have that realization, but this determination, like one should be identified as devotee, it's a grave thing to have in us.
The heading is following in footsteps. That's what we're doing. If we're not there, it's okay. We follow in footsteps.